Good evening.
So you had your shanti. So now it's time for some adventures. No, actually, that was very beautiful, and those are very beautiful songs. Amuna means Amuna Kuline, and so on. So this morning, is that all right? The microphone, like that, up. Like that. How's that? So, you may recall that Pandavas escaped from the city of Varnavada. And we talked about how they first fled and reached a point in the forest far away from the city. And they were accosted there by a Rakshasa named Hidimba. First, of course, his sister, who fell in love with Bhima, and they eventually went on to the city of Ekachakra. But they stayed in the house of a Brahmana. And Bhima eventually killed a mighty Rakshasa there in Baka. I'd like to take a step back so that we can look at how not all these activities, but what did it look like from the point of view of the world, let's say the House of Lack. So how did the world see at least those events which they knew about? For one thing, when the House of Lack burned down, the news spread, I want to say like wildfire, but the news spread quickly everywhere that the five Kuru princes and their mother have died in this terrible fire. I mean, even today, that's for example, there was recently a tragedy involving Poland, a flight into Russia and so on. So the death, or the apparent death of the five Kuru princes, including Yudhisthira, all of them. And their mother Kunti, the famous Kunti, was of course a huge headline. I mean, this was like shocking, dramatic news for everyone. However, there is evidence that this tragic event was not altogether, there was still some mystery attached to it. Now, for one thing, Purochana died. And therefore, Duryodhana never in fact had the final confirmation he wanted. Duryodhana, of course, needed Purochana to say, they're dead. But Purochana was dead. That itself was, to some minds anyway, suspicious. Now, from the point of view of the people of Hastinapur, what did they feel? The people of Hastinapur, who loved the Pandavas. They actually suspected an assassination attempt. And when they heard the news, of course, it was, I think, for example, when I was a young boy, Kennedy was assassinated. I mean, there's different events where great leaders are assassinated in Israel, the Safra Rabin, right? That must have been very shocking for people. And so people actually went out into the streets and they blamed the government. I pointed this out before, that there was freedom of speech. People often criticized the government, and there was never any hint that you couldn't do that, or there was something bad would happen to you if you did it. So the people in general strongly suspected that Duryodhana was behind it, that this had actually not been an accident, but an assassination. So that was in the air. The strong anger, this anger among just the people in general. And then, of course, there was Duryodhana in great anxiety because Purochana was dead. Now, it's also, as Shankar and I were discussing, that in some accounts of this, the Pandavas, before they set fire to the house, they went to the morgue or the crematorium and they took five bodies. They found five bodies and put them in the house so that the people, because when the fire went up, of course, as soon as the fire started, very soon people realized that there was a fire in the city. And the word went out, and the whole city woke up in the middle of the night, and everyone rushed to the house. And of course, they didn't have the kind of equipment we have today. You know, there were no, you know, firefighting helicopters or whatever. And so there was very little they could do except to stand there and watch in horror as this house went up in flames. And of course, the Pandavas were nowhere to be seen. And they suspected the worst. So the people of Varnavata were shocked. They witnessed this fire. And of course, apparently when the fire finally burned itself out, much later, they found the remains of these bodies. And without modern forensic techniques, they must have assumed these were the Pandavas. And so the word went to Hastinapur. And Vidura could not, how should I put it? He could not perhaps fully convince everyone that he was grief-stricken. Now Vidura, just like Duryodhana, did not have any confirmation. He knew he sent an excavator. He knew that a tunnel was being dug. He knew that there was a plan. You know, plan A was kill the Pandavas. Plan B was kill Purochana and escape. And so, in all the panic and the super adrenaline situation of escaping the house, there was no question of, like, let's just send one email to Uncle Vidura. So they really had no way of communicating. They went to Ekachakra. They had no trusted persons with them. There was no one they could trust to take a message to Vidura. And so communications really broke down. And so you have a situation where Vidura strongly suspects they escaped but has no confirmation. Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra suspect they died, but they have no confirmation. Vidura is, and undoubtedly, again, these are extremely shrewd politicians. Undoubtedly, Duryodhana and his men were carefully watching Vidura to see how he reacted, and so on. And so the whole thing was up in the air. The people's, if Hastinapur suspected it was an assassination, the whole world was shocked by it, and that was the situation. Meanwhile, the Pandavas went to the Ekachakra. Now, the news must have eventually reached Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra that not too far from Varnavata, on the night that the Pandavas died, a Rakshasa was brutally killed. And this, of course, was Bhima's trademark. So, by the time they got to Ekachakra and lived in the house of the Brahman, that was presumably much farther away, and therefore you couldn't exactly connect things. But still, what I mean to say is there was a general belief that the Pandavas were dead, that Kunti also had died. There were suspicions in various quarters for various reasons they had not died and were still alive, and it really was still an open mystery, in a sense, that probably they were dead. But now, the reason I mentioned this is because, well, you'll see why in a few minutes. Now, the Pandavas have killed, or Bhima has killed the demon Baka after eating his dinner, and Kunti tells them that we'd better get out of Dodge. We really probably should leave here because we don't want this kind of attention. Everyone's going to start talking about this. And the fact that there are five young men and their mother staying in the house of the Brahmin whose turn it was to feed the Rakshasa. And so it was clear to see that they needed to leave. At that time, the Brahmin came, as I explained this morning, the BNN, the Brahminical News Network, that actually, in this culture, it was the wandering sages and Brahmins who often did provide the news, because they were the travelers. They were articulate, they were intelligent, they had access to the government as Brahmins, and often you find it's these Brahmins who traveled, who met each other at different, I guess you'd call it Brahmana watering holes, and they would actually spread the news. So at that time, a brahmana came to a kshatriya and met with the Pandavas. He went to that brahmin's house and met the Pandavas and told them something which was very shocking. And that is that the last the Pandavas knew, the last they knew was that with their help, the dear friend of their father, Drupada, had been humiliated. He'd lost half his kingdom. He lost his will to govern the half that was left. He'd gone off into the forest. Now the Brahmin reported that, in fact, Drupada had found two powerful Brahmins named Yaga and Upayaga. Upa, in Sanskrit, means kind of small. In this case, it's like Yaga and little Yaga. So often in Sanskrit, a younger brother is like the brothers, like for example, Indra's kid brother is called Upendra, which is actually an incarnation of Vamana. And so it's sort of like Indra and kid Indra, or Yaga and little Yaga. So these were two powerful Brahmins, and Drupada was realizing that with his Kshatriya power, he could not defeat Drona, and he had no other purpose in life except to avenge himself and get back his kingdom. He searched everywhere for brahmanas who had the power to deal with Drona. And he finally found these two, these very powerful ascetic brahmins, Yaga and Upayaga, these two brothers. And somehow or other, he served them menially. Here was a king, one of the great kings of the time, and yet like a brahmachari, in a very humble mood, he simply served these brahmins until they agreed to grant his wish. And his wish was, Drupada wanted a son who would kill Drona. Wanted to keep it in the family. So they granted his wish. The older brother was a little reluctant, like, we don't generally do that kind of thing. But the younger brother thought, hey, you know, our business is sacrifice. And so it's kind of like the family business. So they finally agreed to do it. And they performed the sacrifice, and out of the sacrificial fire, came sort of like this consummate warrior who just flew out of the sacrificial fire, named Drishtadyumna. And he was born with the power to kill Drona, who was not only a military professor, but himself, although he was a brahmana, he had these extraordinary weapons which he had received from Parashuram. And therefore was one of the most dangerous men in the world. Also, at no extra cost to Drupada, from the altar of the sacrificial fire came out a goddess, you could say. I mean, a human woman, but who was, in a sense, a goddess. And she came out of the sacrificial fire. Her temperament was fiery. And she was so beautiful that her beauty was so great that it was actually one of the creations of the gods to destroy the Asuras. Because so great was her beauty that again and again the Asuras would succumb to her beauty and be destroyed. And this, of course, was Draupadi. And she has many names, Panchali, because her father's kingdom was Panchala, Draupadi, because her father was Drupada, Yajnasena. She has many different names, and also she's called Krishna, with a long A at the end, feminine, because she was so devoted to Krishna. So this is Draupadi. Now, the Pandavas knew nothing of this. They were off in some town. And to hear that Drupada, who was like their uncle, the dear friend of their father, had now begotten a son who would kill their guru. So they were very shocked to hear this. Suddenly the balance of world power was shifting with this. And the Brahmin also informed the Pandavas that Draupadi, whose beauty was legendary now in the world, was going to hold a Swayamvara and choose a husband. And the Brahmin looked at the Pandavas and said, you Brahmins, he thought they were Brahmins, you Brahmins are kind of, you know, look like you're in pretty good shape. So why don't you go to the Svayamvara and compete for Draupadi? Now, first of all, here was the daughter of one of their father's closest friends. Her beauty was now legendary. And if the Pandavas could somehow or other win Draupadi and thereby form this alliance with Drupada, they would now have a major world power behind them and they could come out of hiding. So they had all kinds of reasons. There were romantic reasons and there were very practical geopolitical reasons. And they sort of all combined. And so the Pandavas said, yeah, let's go. We'll go with you. So on the way there, they met that king of the Gandharvas, isn't it? On the road to the Svayamvara. Yeah, I believe it is. And this will have repercussions later in the story. On the way there, they're going to Brahmins, and again, they were dressed like Brahmins. Like Brahmana, young men, young Brahmanas, and so on the way, sometimes they would walk by themselves, so they were on the bank of the Ganges, and they wanted to take bath in the Ganges in the evening, but there were some Gandharvas there. There was actually the Gandharva king was in the water. And remember that another Gandharva had killed the Kuru king, Chitrangada, the son of Shantanu. So, the Gandharva insulted them and said, stay away from the river. That at this time of the night, the river is only for Gandharvas. So there's another problem with the Gandharva. And the Pandavas must have remembered that one of these people killed their forefather, actually. So Arjuna stepped forward and replied that the Ganga, the Ganges, is a sacred river. There's no restriction, anyone at any time can take shelter in her waters. At that point, the Gandharva fired a weapon at Arjuna, so once he fired, Arjuna was free to respond. And so Arjuna, who was kind of thrilled at the chance to do some of this stuff again, Arjuna immediately fired back these flaming weapons and literally knocked the Gandharva unconscious and burned his chariot to ashes. And the Gandharva woke up, he's kind of a good sport, because his name was Chitraratha, one who has a beautiful chariot. He said, now I'm Dugdaratha, one who's got a burned out chariot. Actually, this story takes place a little later. I think I just got a little out of sequence. Anyway, Shankar kindly but that's a real story, but we'll come back to that story later. So the Pandavas are going to Panchala with the Brahmins, and they get there. Now, these great events were an important economic activity also, because one of the things the Brahmins told the Pandavas is that the king is going to give out a lot of charity. So some of the Brahmins would actually depend upon these great royal events to go and receive charity and so on. Anyway, so there's an elaborate description in the Mahabharata about all the arrangements that Drupada made. He built guest quarters, just like here, he built that nice new Ganga building. And so for this great event, they built all kinds of guest quarters. And Drupada, of course, as a world leader, was keenly aware of and was monitoring all of the reports and rumors about the Pandavas. And Drupada's dream had always been to marry his daughter to one of the sons of Pandu. And Drupada, his intuition, he suspected. Also, Drupada, as a good friend of Pandu, must have been also close with Vidura. And so the text doesn't really talk about this, but somehow or other, we do know that Drupada suspected the Pandavas were alive, and therefore he, with Draupadi, arranged a Svayamvara ceremony that would favor the Pandavas if in fact they were alive. Anyway, this was a typical thing where you had to shoot. What was it that there was a wheel? A wheel with spokes was turning, and behind this turning wheel was a target, a small target, and you had to shoot through this spinning wheel and hit the target, And you had to look at the target, not directly, but as it was reflected in water. That was, you know, the water was not even still. The water was moving about. So you had to look in this agitated, turbulent water, see the reflection of a spinning wheel, and shoot through the spokes and hit a target. Clearly not for a beginning archer. Not for the neophyte. So this was the task. Now it's interesting that there's also a bow to be strung, isn't it? This is a typical thing. You find it in the Ramayana, you find it when Krishna entered Dwarka, that they make these really stiff bows, and they're huge stiff bows that no human being can bend. And so you have to hit the target with this bow, which is almost impossible to string because you can't bend it. And so it takes a tremendous feat of strength to do that. So, meanwhile, all the princes have come, because Draupadi, basically, it's, you know, like standing room only for princes. Because Draupadi is so beautiful that all of the important princes in the world have come, and one by one they step forward and basically embarrass themselves. Most of the ordinary princes, some of them try to string the bow, and the bow snaps back and sends them flying. And imagine they have to pick themselves up and pretend like nothing humiliating happened. And, you know, these are young, proud princes, and walk back to their seat like, I didn't really want to string it anyway. So all these princes are being humiliated. And then some of the greatest warriors like Karna or Duryodhana, there's a whole story about Karna which I won't go into because it's actually not there in the critical text. Anyway. So everyone tries to string the bow, and no one's able to do it. Actually, who was it that was able to string the bow but couldn't hit the target?
Karna.
Karna. Strung the bow, couldn't hit the target. So then, the Brahmins are telling Arjuna, you know, try it, you got nothing to lose. So, and Arjuna, of course, has seen Draupadi, and he steps forward. Now, one more detail at this point. And that is, this is the first point chronologically in the Mahabharata that we meet Krishna. In the Mahabharata, Krishna and Balaram. Krishna and his older brother Balaram are there. And what's interesting is that the Pandavas are in disguise, and there are a lot of people in the audience, there are a lot of people contending for Draupadi that know the Pandavas. Duryodhana is there, Karna is there. There's all these people that actually know them. And so they're in deep disguise. I mean, not only do they have like baggy robes on, but you know, all kinds of other things. They obviously, you know, have their hair done a special way. And the Pandavas are in deep disguise. And yet there's this amazing scene. The first time we see Krishna, Krishna is just watching everything. And he turns to Balaram and says, oh, they're the Pandavas. Yeah, that must be Yudhisthira. And that one there is Bhima, and that's Arjuna. This is very interesting because we have no history of Krishna and the Pandavas even met. And yet, so from the very beginning, from Krishna's first appearance, it's clear that he is not an ordinary human being. He knows exactly who everyone is. Anyway, so then Arjuna steps forward, and the reaction to his stepping forward is mixed. The Brahmins are kind of getting a kick out of it, like, hey, look, it's one of our guys. And so they're kind of like, they do this funny thing when the Brahmins get like real excited. The way Brahmins like that in ancient times cheered was they would take their chadars and the top down and kind of like wave their claw. They didn't have those, you know, air horns or stadium horns in those days, so they just wave their claw. Now the Kshatriyas thought, we're sort of like half amused. They were half amused. Gotta do the wave. The Kshatriyas were half amused and half irritated. Because they thought, what is he doing? This is not a Brahmin event. You know, just ring your bells and do your fire. So there was definitely a tension here. But they thought it's just some, you know, it's the Yiddish word, shlemiel. You know, they thought it's just So Arjun comes forward, and it's just, you know, some Brahmin kid in baggy robes, and probably going to trip over his own robes. But then Arjun goes out there, and he strings the bow without too much problem, and then he takes the arrow, and he goes into his meditation, and he hits the target. And at that point, as they say, the crowd goes wild in various ways. For one thing, the Brahmins go berserk, and they love it. And the Kshatriyas are furious because, hey, you know, we give you guys charity. You know, we give you all this stuff, and now you're stealing our women. So the Kshatriyas, the warriors, were absolutely livid. They were outraged. And they wanted to kill this so-called Brahmin. And so they rushed forward. Even if a Kshatriya wins a woman, you know, he has to fight his way out of the arena. And here's someone who really shouldn't have been, you know, you can't, now the Brahmins are stealing our women. So all these great heroes came forward to stop Arjun. And then, and it's funny, I mean, it's kind of a farcical scene in some ways, because the Brahmins pour out of the stands, and they're a little, like, I don't know, kamandalus, little water pots and dandas, you know, they're going to fight these great Kshatriyas. You know, bop the king on the head with his water pot. There actually is a lot of humor in the Sanskrit text if you kind of relax when you read it. And so Duryodhana, he doesn't want to, you know, because these are Brahmins, and most of the Brahmins are actually kind of uncoordinated. So Duryodhana just sort of goes over to the Brahmin and just kind of plays with them, you know, and sort of keeps them away so they don't hurt themselves. But Arjun's a different case. Meanwhile, by this time, actually, before this melee broke out, Yudhisthira and the twins, Nakula and Sahadeva, had gone back to make sure their mother was all right because she was at home. And they were staying in a potter's shop just outside the city. So anyway, so Karna goes to Arjun. He wants to, not knowing who he is, and suddenly Bhima, he brandishes some kind of weapon. Bhima, who's also so-called Brahmin, sort of an oversized Brahmin, and Bhima comes forward, and people see the Kshatriya, the king's thing, just by the way he stands, like, this guy knows how to fight. So Karna thinks he's just going to sort of pay, you know, teach this Brahmin a lesson, so he shoots an arrow, but suddenly all this stuff comes back at him, and he says, this is serious. So suddenly, it's really Bhima and Arjuna against all these warriors, and the warriors, they're fighting, but they're kind of conflicted because they're supposed to be Brahmins, but still, these Brahmins are really deadly, and so we better really fight. And so this goes on for a while, and finally, and meanwhile, the other kings are chasing Drupada all over the stadium for giving his daughter to a Brahmin. So he has to run for his life in his own stadium. So it is kind of a funny scene. And anyway, to make a long story short, Bhima and Arjun take Drupada because she put the garland on Arjun, and so technically she accepted him, and it's like, it's a done deal. And so Bhima and Arjun fight their way out of the arena, take Draupadi, and somehow flee back to the potter's shop. Drupada, who by now, actually Drupada took shelter with the Brahmins, and then he tells his son Drishtadyumna, follow them and find out who they are, because in all the excitement, Drupada giving away his daughter to this Brahmin, this and that, it suddenly occurs to Drupada, I have absolutely no idea who just took my daughter away. So Drupada sends his son Drishtadyumna, go find out who they are. Who is that guy? So Drupada goes, and he comes back to his father and says, I don't think they're Brahmins. I don't think, you know, the one who won Draupadi and the other one seems to be his brother. I really don't think they're Brahmins, because Drupada actually saw them. He kind of was spying on them, a little espionage. And he saw them, they took their robes off, and, you know, they were the Pandavas. And they had the typical scars of warriors, because when you shoot an arrow all the time, you get certain marks on your arm. They had the marks of warriors. They were built like warriors. And Drishtadyumna said, all they talk about is fighting and wars and battles and things like that. You know, no mantras. So it looked like they were Kshatriyas, and Drupada was still holding out the hope that what if these are the Pandavas? Of course, Drishtadyumna never met them, because he was born long after all this stuff. Oh, by the way, Drishtadyumna and Draupadi were born kind of like grown. That's why, I mean, they were born recently, but they were, that's why Draupadi was a mature young lady and Drishtadyumna was a mature young man, because like Vyasa, it was a celestial birth. They just came out sort of ready. And so, it's interesting, Drupada had to prepare a reception, because he gave his daughter away to this guy, he doesn't know who he is. And so, there were different ways to receive people from different sectors of society. There was a Brahminical reception, a Kshatriya reception, a Vaishnava Shudra reception. They still didn't know who these people were. It could just be like a real tough Shudra. They didn't know who it was. And so Drupada actually prepared receptions for all the different Varnas. And then it's like diplomacy. Then they get here, we'll figure out who they are, and we'll just, you know, we'll press that button. So they prepared all the different receptions. And there's this beautiful scene. I think it's one of the, it's one of my favorite scenes of the Mahabharata, where Drupada sends word to Arjuna and his family, like, please come to the palace and let us receive you. By this time, the other Kshatriyas have kind of calmed down and gone home. And so the Pandavas now come out of hiding. And, no more baggy robes. They're actually dressed nicely. And you can actually see who they are. And they walk into... They walk into the palace of Drupada walking like kings. You know, before they kind of had to walk and talk like sages and fake everybody out, but now they can be themselves. They're actually walking like princes and kings. And they walk into the palace, and everyone that sees them realizes these are very important people. And Yudhisthira, without even waiting to be asked, goes and sits in a seat that's meant for royalty. And so Drupada realizes that, you know, these people are royalty, and then he asks them that, you know, who are you? And he reveals his secret wish that one of the sons of his dear friend Pandu would marry his daughter. And Yudhisthira tells him that you will not be disappointed, we are the Pandavas. And so at that point the Pandavas, you know, what would you say, out themselves, they reveal themselves, and then they have one more bit of information for Drupada, for King Drupada, which is that, oops, we're over time, so let's find it out tomorrow morning. So, thank you very much.
For tomorrow, wake up at 5:30, 6 a.m. morning satsang here in the temple, 7:45 Balakrishna Puja at the Balakrishna temple, 8 o'clock yoga class, 10 branch, 11 orientation for new guests leaving from reception, and the Vanadurga Puja at the Vanadurga Temple. 1 o'clock, a workshop for the guest with Radha on the garden platform. The subject is happiness, peace of mind. 4 o'clock, the second yoga class. 6, dinner. 7, Gita Parayana, chanting the Bhagavad Gita here in the temple, and 8, satsang. And we continue with the Mahabharata Katha with Vidyananda Das Goswami. For the TTC, tomorrow is day off. Please come to morning satsang, evening satsang, and do your karma yoga. And the rest of the day, you study for the exam. So I wish you good luck for the study. And now we are going to conclude with the final prayers and arati.
Control the mind. Free us from egoism, lust, anger, greed, hatred, and jealousy. Fill our hearts with divine virtues. Let us behold thee in all these names and forms. Let us serve thee in all these names and forms. Let us ever remember thee. Let us ever sing thy glories. If thy name be on our lips, survive thee forever and ever. Om Guru Satguru Shivananda Maharaj ki. Jai. Shri Swami Vishnu Devananda Maharaj ki.
Jai.
Om Namah Shivaya.
Thank you.